Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you to our Tech Talk training session of March 26, 2007. We are very honored to welcome this guest here. This has not been an easy day for him. I won't go any further than that, but he's here. He's a real trooper, and we really appreciate it. He's Jeff Levy, the host of Computer News on KNX Radio, Saturday and Sundays from 12 to 3 Pacific time. And my friend John wondered if it was syndicated. We'll probably get that answer because he thinks he heard you from Boston. So we'll see. So without further ado, Jeff, we're going to give you the microphone. And to lock it, again, Alt-L locks the mic, and you can just sit back and talk. And Alt-L unlocks it when you're going to take questions. So without further ado, I want to give you Mr. Jeff Levy of KNX Radio.
Hello, hello. Robert, are you there? Everybody, I'm so pleased to be here. I must tell you in advance that I have to be finished with this by April 1st. But having said that, there's so much to talk about. I am not, in fact, syndicated yet, but it is in process. And, of course, it's a good thing. So now, let's you and I talk. Ever asked yourself questions like this? What kind of a computer should I be buying? Should I be buying a laptop, a desktop, maybe a tablet? And what's the differences between the wireless web and Wi-Fi? And how does a plasma screen work? I don't know that that's going to be helpful, how a plasma screen works. But I think the rest of it is. So let's start off with the big decision. Actually, there are several. First, are we talking about Macs or PCs? And in my view, the PC has much more effective software that enables you as a computer user. There isn't much for the Mac yet, but because it now uses the Intel platform, I think that's going to change. Question is how long? I don't know. So I'm going to assume that we're looking at a PC. Now, of course, there's the desktop, the laptop, and the tablet. The desktop is really a misnomer because it's a rug top or a tile top. It sits on the floor. On top of your desk, you have the screen, and, of course, you have the input devices that you use to get information to the computer. Now, the upside of a desktop, if you will, is that it is very easily expanded in terms of capabilities. You have extra places in the tower, which is the chassis, to put in new devices, optical devices, new hard drives. It's very expandable. The laptop, on the other hand, is limited to an expansion of memory and the addition of an external keyboard, external pointing device, and perhaps an external set of speakers and sound cards. So there is that limitation. On the upside, it doesn't take up much room. You can close it and stick it under a bed or in a closet or wherever, and it just sits till you're ready for it. And, of course, you can use it anywhere. You can use it anywhere. Now, how about using it anywhere? If you have a system at home, a desktop, you have a way that you can connect with the Internet, hopefully broadband, high speed, either DSL or cable, and there are differences. The speed of your DSL connection will depend pretty much on how far the location you're in is situated in terms of what's called a phone switch. There is a cap on the distance, and the further you are from the switch, the closer to the end cap, as it were, the slower your connection. The upside is if you are within a range of 10,000 feet, you'll get a decent performance. If you're within 5,000 to 8,000, you'll get very good performance. And you can get DSL now for $12.95 a month for a whole year for new customers. And that company is DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. The phone companies will offer you DSL for about $15 a month, And often you need to sign up for some sort of a calling program. With DSL Extreme, you don't. There's nothing to buy. There are no setup fees. They give you a free modem. The other thing I love about this company, and I know these folks, I've known them for years before they became sponsors on my radio show, is that the tech support department, if you will, is, well, shall I say local? How about Granada Hills in the San Fernando Valley? I've been through the tech department many times, and these are people whose first language is English who are anxious to keep you on the Internet. Now, cable is very fast. The downsides to cable, there are two of them. First, as more and more of your neighbors decide they want to go on cable for their Internet needs, it will, with, and I'm using an arbitrary number here, about 400 homes, it will start to slow down and stay slow unless the cable provider is willing to invest in more hardware and add more nodes to their system. I know that Adelphia was doing just that, and now that it's Time Warner, because they took over, cable is brutally fast in comparison to what you're used to, but at a price. And I think Time Warner is now advertising cable Internet for $29.95 a month for a year. After that, through the roof. So the other ways that you can access the Internet, if you have a laptop, is to find public hotspots. Santa Clarita Valley, hotspots. Long Beach, hotspots. Riverside downtown, hotspots. More and more we're seeing hotspots that are free, but there are also coffee shops that have hotspots. If you spend $3 or $4, you get to use it. And, of course, there's the ubiquitous Starbucks, which will allow you to connect through T-Mobile for a fee. Now, the best program I think T-Mobile offers for that kind of Internet connect is essentially a pay-as-you-go setup where you're paying $6 an hour. I don't know about you, but I could get lost in my computer on the Internet for an hour in the blink of a fraction of time, shall we say. So those are the options. One other option is to use your cell phone as a modem. Some cell phones will do that, and plans include unlimited data access, the limitation being the battery time on your cell phone. Or you can buy an adapter that fits in the PCMCIA slot. I know I butchered that, sorry. And there are three of them that I tested, Sprint, Verizon, and Singular. Singular, the worst, Sprint, the best. The unlimited plan is $60 a month. I don't think that's for most of us. They do, oh, that's my cat. He wants to be heard. They do have plans cheaper than that, but you have a limitation on how much time you can use. Interestingly enough, one of our reporters at KNX, we'll just call him Ron, had the unlimited plan for Verizon and apparently didn't read that small print in the license exam, in the license information, where it essentially says that unlimited doesn't really mean unlimited. And so they called him, pardon me, they emailed him and sent him paper mail, saying that essentially you're using too much bandwidth, we're taking back our stuff, you can't be on anymore. Now he's on Sprint, and he's going faster, and he's not getting those kinds of mess. You know, only in our world of today can we say that unlimited really isn't. It depends on what is. That kind of thinking makes me nuts. Now, let's talk about some of the dangers your computer and you are open to when you're on the Internet. Let's start with the old-fashioned virus. Now, it's more than viruses here. You're talking about viruses, Trojan horses, and worms. A Trojan horse is just exactly what it sounds like. It refers back to ancient Greece, where the city of Troy was taken by people hiding in an enormous horse that was left at the front gates to the city. So at the right hour, the soldiers came out of the horse and found the army folks kind of sleeping, having had lots to drink, blah, blah, and they took the city back. Well, a Trojan horse, in computer terms, carries what we call a payload. It can deposit something in your computer that puts it at risk. The classic payload is called a keylogger, which will read every keystroke you type and then send that information to a server, and you don't know it's happening. A virus is a bit of code that can corrupt your files, can corrupt your data, can corrupt your programs. There are viruses that will even cause your antivirus software to shut itself down and not allow you to reinstall it. Those are very serious. Viruses in the form of worms can give people essentially control of your computer, or worse, make your computer a bot, B-O-T, like a zombie. It's doing things out there, sending things to other computers. You never see it happen. And it's being used in a botnet, which is a series of these zombie or bot computers that can do really destructive damage. So you need to find a very good antivirus program. You know, of course, that Norton is the big name in antivirus, has been forever, but they do astoundingly well in the enterprise world. In other words, in the world of computers in business and companies. They work great. When it comes to the consumer, I find that Norton is bloated, slow, and often doesn't find everything I needed to find. There are other options, of course. A lot of computers today come with McAfee or McAfee. It's so-so. I'm not overly impressed. Then there's Panda, P-A-N-D-A. And then there's Node 32. And there's several that are free on the Internet. The one I'm currently using is by a company in Arizona called Secure Resolutions. And it's packaged here in Southern California as anti-cybercrime professional, available at notebookshop.com. That's notebookshop.com. And I must tell you that when I uninstalled Norton and installed anti-cybercrime professional, it found eight viruses that Norton had missed, and Norton was totally up to date. Now, the other thing I like about this program, Anti-Cybercrime Professional, is that it stops more than viruses. It stops Trojan horses and worms. It stops spyware and adware. And it doesn't leave any doors open so hackers and identity thieves can get to you. It's $49.95 for two licenses. It's not yet running on Vista, but it will hopefully shortly, and I'm very satisfied. It was a great investment. I use it on my laptop, and I use it on my desktop, the one I'm using now to speak with you with, which is a fabulous concept. Love it. Now, what is spyware? What is adware? Spyware literally means a program that is inserted in your computer to spy on you. At the easiest, lowest level, it simply watches where you go on the Internet and tracks it and sends that information. At its worst, it can be the keylogger. It can give information about you to other websites. And, of course, adware is those awful pop-ups that say, you need to get your know-what enlarged, or you need a home mortgage. You get all these crazy pop-up ads. That's adware. Now, there is adequate protection available free on the Internet. Adware is .com is one place. You can Google free spyware software. There are some that are fairly good. And again, I'm happy with the anti-cybercrime professional because it does the job for me. So the third leg, if you will, of a triangle that means defending yourself on the internet has got to be a firewall. And a firewall is a piece of hardware that protects you as though you were building a 8-foot cinder block wall around your home. Now, there are two kinds of firewalls, actually three. The first is the firewall I recommend for dial-up connections. There are two that are real good. One is Zone Alarm by ZoneLabs.com. The other happens to be Black Ice at BlackIce.com. That's the one I would use were I doing dial-up. That's the one I keep on my laptop if I have to do dial-up at a hotel. Next is the router. And a router is typically used to connect computers together or to give you wireless access to the internet with a laptop that you can walk around with. The routers, be they wired or wireless, are firewalls. And they're good firewalls. The ultimate, of course, is the Pure firewall that doesn't do router work. It's just a firewall. Sonic is a name that people in the business, you'll pay a lot more money. You might pay $500-$600 for one, as opposed to a decent router, which if you shop, you can find for $40. So those are the three, antivirus and anti-spyware. Antivirus includes things that will stop viruses, Trojan worms. Anti-spyware should include anti-adware, of course, your firewall. Now, Windows has its own firewall, but, you know, if you just go to a website that can try to... I like PC Flank. PCFlank.com does a decent job, and there are others. You can Google that. You really need to check everything. Make sure you are safe on the internet. Because we tend to live on the internet. Has there been a day in your life recently where you just said, I'm not going on the net today? I don't know about you, but that has not happened for me. Now, in new computers, they are breaking the barriers of capacity in hard disk. It's not difficult to get a laptop with a 120-gig hard drive or better. And that's humongous. That's really huge. Memory, 2 gigs is all you really need. And 2 gigabytes of RAM and 120-gig hard drive coupled with a capable video card with its own video RAM, all of that will make upgrading to Vista easy should you decide to do it. Do I recommend that? Heck no, till you know that the software that runs your life can work with Vista. What's the point? Now, of course, like XP and other versions of Windows, Vista has the compatibility mode where if you have a program called Jeff, and there's the Jeff.exe file, well, hey, you can tell Vista, tell Jeff.exe that it's not really Vista, it's XP, or ME, or 98, or 95. I'm not so sure I would want to depend on that to run a program, for example, QuickBooks. No, I would want it to run natively in Vista. So maybe a good thing if you're in the market for a new computer is Windows XP with an upgrade to Vista. Maybe a coupon, a discount, or even a freebie. A freebie! So that's a good thing. Now, if you're somebody who keeps large files, music files, and so on, it's not a bad strategy to have an external hard drive for either a laptop or a desktop. That way, you can carry your pictures, your sounds, whatever it is, with you wherever you go. A USB-powered external drive of 3, 4, 500 gigabytes, 750 gigabytes, you can compute the entire state of Maine, I guess. So external drives are good, and they're good for backups. They're good for backups. Now, I read an article today about the Department of Revenue in the state of Alaska. And that's the department that writes checks to residents of Alaska based on income they get from oil companies. Every resident of Alaska gets a check once a year from this fund. And it can be $1,800, it can be $3,000, it just depends. But a computer tech accidentally formatted a hard drive that had information on a quarter of a million people. They tried to get it back. They got Microsoft involved. They had Dell involved. What's not clear is whether they went to a data recovery expert who could have gotten it back. But they said, not to worry, we have backup tapes. Well, guess what? They were unreadable. So what did the state of Alaska do? It went to their storage place and removed 300 boxes of paperwork and hired extra people. 70 people altogether worked on this, rescanned, re-entered the data. I'm telling you, if that doesn't get you to look at your backup, there's something wrong. And you need to test the backup that you make to make sure it's legit. Now, a lot of people do these automated backup software programs where at 4 a.m. or at midnight, it's going to back you up. And I say, I want to know what's going on. So I create a batch file that simply copies files or folders to an external drive in a DOS window. And I make that a shortcut on my desktop. I make a file. I call it backup, period, B-A-T. You can do that in Notepad or WordPad. Got to be saved as a text file. And the first line I write is CLS. That clears. And then I say X copy space the source, which in my case ultimately is my documents, and then a space and then a destination, D colon or whatever that drive is, backslash, and then you have to create a location. Well, don't even create the location, just the backslash. The first time you run it, DOS is going to ask you if the reference to the destination is a file, a folder, or what it's, what you've got to tell it what it is. It's a file or a folder. Now it backs up. By the way, after the command line, xcopy, at the end of that, you tag on a forward slash SS and SAM. It's C colon backslash. It's xcopy space. C colon, backslash, and then whatever the destination folder is, and then a space and a forward slash S as in Sam, because that will take any of the subfolder. And then a space forward slash Y, so when it sees that you already have this kind of folder on the backup drive, it's not going to stop and say, hey, it's already there. Do you want to do it? So now I have an icon on my desktop. The icon points to the backit.bat file, which you put in the Windows directory, so it can be accessible from anywhere. And then you just let it run. And I actually, it puts all the files and folders being copied on the screen so that I know I have a backup. I just can't imagine going without a backup. Let's see. Wireless capabilities in laptops, yes, I'm seeing that. But it doesn't do you any good if you bought, for example, a Sony Vaio, and it has a built-in ability to contact Singular and get on the Internet when you know that that technology is very slow. So you have to find out what's going on. Somebody asked me recently about refrigerators and home appliances that are smart. That's very close to happening. Refrigerators that will do things like reorder for you when you run low. If a carton of milk or some eggs have been in the refrigerator too long, it's going to mark them as spoiled and tell you to remove them. And there's just all kinds of technology to automate the home with your voice. You call ahead as you're on the way home, say romance mode. And when you walk in the door, hopefully with somebody you want to be with, the lights will be down, the fireplace will be on, romantic music from Mantovani, whatever. You can also say, I'm on my way home, start the oven. You can also just walk in and say, I'm home, and then the lights will go the way they're supposed to, and the radio or television will turn on to your favorite station. So that technology's got to come for all of us, and I'm going to keep you informed when you listen to my show. What about cookies? And I'm not talking about Fig Newtons here. Originally, cookies were not used for in your computer. That's what I internet and we're going there back. Sirs, but a marker tomorrow, you've done what you're doing. My, that's invasion, and I don't like it. But there's another kind of cookie that's even worse, because the cookies I'm talking about send messages to a certain website involved with what they're doing and so forth. Other cookies can go to other websites that have nothing to do with your buying and surfing habits. Cookies. Is it okay to delete cookies? Oh, yeah. The worst thing that can happen is it will reinstall itself if it's a cookie that's necessary for you to actually access a website. All the other cookies will be gone. And in Internet Explorer, it's done by clicking on Tools, Internet Options, and there's a place to erase cookies, to erase history, to do all of it. Something you should keep track of. Now, there's also a temp folder. Is it safe to erase all of that? Yeah, actually it is. Actually it is. And overall, if you just maintain your computer, it will run faster. And that brings up the D word, and I'm talking about defragging. In your mind, I want you to picture a doctor's office. You walk into the doctor's office, and the first person to greet you is likely the receptionist. And behind the receptionist, you'll see walls of files of different colors. That's what will be there if you could. Now, if a doctor is just starting out in his practice, his first patient will actually be physical file number one. Physical file number one. The next patient, even though the last name is different, will be physical file two. And so there's a system here where all the files are contiguous in the order that they were created. Now, of course, a lot of offices are going to sort them alphabetically, and that's fine. But when you enter data in a computer, it's not contiguous. As a matter of fact, Windows stores files in little bits and pieces. It creates a map so that when you call up, for example, a document, it knows how many places on the hard drive it needs to click to get the document. Now, when you delete files, you leave blank spaces in this collection of files and folders. And that slows you down basically because your hard drive is reading data and wasting time on empty pockets that contain nothing. So when you defragment your drive, you are closing all of the open spaces so that the data is once again contiguous. And if you're smart, you will do it. And the way you get to safe mode is as soon as your computer starts, you start tapping until you get a menu, you go into safe mode, and then you go to defragment, which you will find clicking on start, all programs, accessories, and then tools. So how often should you defrag? Oh, by the way, when you're done, you restart your computer to go into regular mode. How often do you defrag? Well, it depends. Constantly adding and deleting data. Once or twice a week, fine. Otherwise, once a month. No more than 90 days, people. Don't let it go that long. Some of you will do 160 days. But nonetheless, defragmenting is very, very important. So what else can we talk about? You buy a new printer. It may have an old version of the driver. You go to the website of the people that make that computer. You download the latest driver. If you buy a brand new computer with Vista, more than likely, you're going to have to do some major downloading of drivers and make sure that that computer has the graphic ability. You're going to need it. All right. right, let's see, a couple of shortcuts here. If you're working on something and you need some privacy, somebody walks on by, hold down the Windows key, the second from the left on the bottom row, and tap the letter D as in David. That is going to bring your desktop up. And if you do it again, it will take you. There are other shortcuts. Windows R brings up the Run dialog box. And when you go to the Start button in Vista, you notice there is no Run command. But it's still there. So the way you get it is you tap and release the Windows key on the keyboard. You press the letter R as in Robert. And there's even a way to put it back on you, but I don't have a Vista command. Should you upgrade to Vista? Well, the best scenario, of course, is a computer with Vista factory install. That way the problems are fixed and it does what it's supposed to. Upgrade, Vista is supposed to be able to throttle itself down to match your hardware. Now, Vista comes in several editions. The bottom entry level is Home Basic. And for that, you do not need to upgrade. It's not really going to give you the best features of Vista. If you're going to upgrade, you start with Vista Home Premium. And for your hardware, a Core Duo or an AMD 64 will make it work fine. You're going to need at least a gig of RAM. 2 gigs are better. And, of course, you're going to need a graphics card that you may have to install in your desktop. So I think the jury won't be in on Vista for 3 to 6 months, maybe a year. And I think the problem is most of us agree that Microsoft has a whole pool of beta testers, and the beta testers are us. And that means we're going to find things in Vista that Microsoft didn't tell existed. And we're the recipients of this public beta testing scam. I don't like that. I've called them to task. It might interest you to know that I essentially bitched about how I, and good for the station. The station said, hey, this is a journalist's opinion, and Jeff is what. And we wouldn't do anything to change that. Otherwise, he's got no integrity. So they asked for a meeting, a massacre. I went for an hour meeting. Is there 5.5 hours? They had 4 people, 3 tech people and a manager. The first thing out of their mouths was, we had to show you why you should not. And I said, fine, but I have an agenda too. And the first thing on my agenda is a question. Here's the question. If I go out and buy a game or a new program, the installer on that program takes over my Vista computer and has administrator rights. So my question is, since that can happen to me if I download a program from the internet, and since I have no defense, what were you guys thinking? Were you thinking safety, or were you thinking convenience for you? And that resulted in a huddle and some whispers and this and that and a recess and 5.5 hours of back and forth. I have learned some things about Vista that I like, and Microsoft now knows the things that I don't like. So my strategy to answer your question about Vista is this. Buy a copy. Give it to your neighbor, Fred. Then position yourself strategically so that you can see the clumps of hair coming out the window and the screaming and yelling. If none of that occurs, well, then Fred's computer, and you might want to find out what Fred uses and compare. If you do an upgrade, one of the options you'll see early on in the process is to make a clean install. That minimizes the chances for problems, and it saves your Windows XP in a folder that can be read. So that's why you want to do that. Interesting stuff. There's never a lack of things to learn about, of things to talk about. One company is using artificial intelligence to run a restaurant. The cameras see you come into the parking lot. They determine if you've been there before. If you have, they determine over the number of visits you made, what you order, and it can actually ping the chefs on a computer screen that says we need to cook this or we need to reorder that next week. It literally automates a lot of functions of managing a restaurant. I think it's going to make restaurants a better place to deal with. And the only question is, will what they save with this technology be passed on to the consumer? And my answer is, in four words, don't hope. Okay, I am ready after to take a question. Hello? Oh, we got a...
Good evening, Jeff. My name is Rob in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Now, let's say if I were to order a new computer tomorrow, and I really don't want Vista... And I've been told that you really, you know, there are computers out there. I guess you can hardly buy anything without Vista. Is it possible to buy? I know it would probably buy a copy of XP and reinstall XP or take Vista out of there. Can you ask a person at your computer tech shop to do that? Because I really, right now, I would not want to buy Vista. For various reasons.
Hear me, Rob?
Yeah, I hear you.
What's going on?
Can you hear me?
You're real low, Jeff. We can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you, Jeff. Go ahead.
Where do you live?
In Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Okay, I think your best bet is to go to a website like Dell or Hewlett Packard and essentially custom build a computer and specify XP.
Hi, Jeff. This is Don from, I'm a little bit north of you, and I'm in Chico. And I had actually two questions, two for the price of one. First one is probably the easier of the two, and that is, are your KNX broadcasts archived somewhere so we could go to their website and hear some of their past broadcasts? The second question is, you alluded to it to some extent, but would you address specifically the rather, well, what some people call draconian measures that Microsoft has taken in terms of file rights management, DRM, and that sort of thing. And some people really are concerned about it, and I wanted to know your opinions on this. Thanks.
All right. Here's what I think about all of this. Microsoft will do what it takes to placate people like RIA, the Recording Industry Association, the folks that sue you if you've got files that came off of a website and you shared them, and they're doing that. Microsoft is not going to do anything to diminish digital rights management, copyright protection, not in the foreseeable future. My broadcasts are not archived, but they should be, and it's doable because they're all stored on a massive hard drive. Hopefully, we will start in April to syndicate this show, and it will come to your location, and you can hear it streaming at knx1070.com.
Hi, thank you, Jeff. It's Joe. If I may ask, I enjoyed being here, and two questions like Don did. You're kind of low, but that's okay. Would you talk about the backup program you use? Some of it is not JAWS accessible, like you mentioned, Zone Alarm. That's not accessible with JAWS. You have to remember, a lot of stuff doesn't work for us. And what do you recommend, or do you know about unattended setups for XP in case a blind person has to install Windows? I don't like Vista either, but thank you very much.
All right, first the backup. I really don't use a backup program. I use a batch file in DOS so that I can have the backup process take place on my screen. And it's a simple thing to do. You create in the Windows folder a text file using Notepad that's called backit, backit, period, bat. And in that file, you give the command starting with the word the letters CLS, Charlie, Larry, Sam. That clears the screen. And then the next line is xcopy, xcopy, space. And then you need to type the destination of the file. For example, C:\ documents and settings, / owner, which would be you, / and then maybe my documents. And then a space, and then the destination. It's going to be on an external hard drive, for example. Then you would say D:\ or E:\, whatever it is. And then you have a space and a forward slash S's and Sam's so that every subfolder in my documents will be backed up, and then a space and a forward slash Y so that it doesn't stop to ask you, gee, there's already a copy of this on your backup drive. Do you really want to do this? Now, the first time you run this batch file, it's going to ask you if the destination is a folder or a file name. You pick D for destination. So now to do a backup, all you have to do is click on Start and then Run and then type Backit, and it'll run. Or you can right-click on the desktop, click New, click Shortcut, and in the command line you type C:\Windows\Backit, B-A-C-K-I-T, dot bat, click Next. In the next box, you just type Backup, then you click Finish. Now you have it. It's ready to go. And I'm sorry, what was your other question? I got lost in my own buffoonery here. What was your other question?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Paul from California. Can I be recognized after he asked again? I have a question about safe mode and defrag.
Whoa!
Okay, this is Dave McElroy speaking. Good afternoon, Jeff. And one of the questions we have, and I bet it's the same question he wants to ask, is most of us who do not happen to have people who are sighted in the home cannot operate in safe mode. It's not workable. We don't yet have access to the BIOS, so that we don't have the ability to run safe mode. And wondering if there's any other way that we could run defrag and make it work. A second question is, we've got a position here where my lady here, Pam, is looking at replace our aging, our desktops are aging. She's wondering whether to go desktop or laptop. I'm kind of wondering if there's any way that any computer that could be used as both. I don't know if such things exist out there. You know, she's got her music, but we can always put that on external hard drive. Just wondering what a good computer would be for somebody who kind of wants both, but maybe isn't sure.
Okay, try one question at a time, please, and you'll get your chance again. Excuse me, Jeff, go ahead.
I'm not real clear on what you're asking.
I think the second question was, he wants a combination laptop and desktop, I think. But the first question was interesting. The safe mode, I think Rob did it for me once, but it's hard to access as a blind person. Is there any other way to get to the safe mode and defrag? I know what you're saying, and it's very important that you have the safe mode.
I don't know of any, but there are defrag programs that can be run at a DOS prompt, and you can make a batch file to do that. A batch file will work in safe mode. Just click on Start. Actually, you can just hit the Windows key, press the letter R, which brings up the Run dialog box, and type in the name of the batch file and hit the Enter key, and there it goes. So we'll take a look to see if we can find some of those programs. But there are DOS-level defrag programs that you can use by simply typing in a keystroke. Even better, if you can get somebody to make you a desktop shortcut to this, you can create a hotkey. So when you press the F9 key, it's going to defrag. And that still works in safe mode.
Yeah, I do believe there's a way to get to that. From you go into accessories and go down to defrag, and disk cleanup is in there. That there is a way to do that. I've done it. It's been a while, but I need to do it again. But you don't need to go into safe mode to do a defrag.
Now, hi, Jeff. It's Rob Turner. Just I'm part of the Tech Talk committee, and one of the things that I do when I do a defrag without going into safe mode is I go into the system tray. And I close out all the running programs that I can, you know, in terms of virus protection, spyware, anything that I think might interfere with defrag. And then I just go ahead and run it, you know, in regular mode. And it seems to work most of the time. I don't know if there are some files that it can't access because I'm not in safe mode. There may be some, but even running it this way seems to help. I was going to ask a quick question, if I can, and that is, do you think Microsoft made a mistake when they basically don't ask the user to be prompted for a password, for instance, if programs on the internet try to run. So for instance, like in Linux, if you're not, you know, the root, you can't run a lot of these programs. And it seems like for security, Microsoft took a shortcut and said, well, we don't care if you're an administrator. If you're not logged on as an administrator, go ahead and run these programs anyway. I wonder if they would have been better off prompting the user for a password when programs like that are trying to run.
You need to confirm that you want to run something before it will let you run it, so that the user that you are does not automatically have administrative rights. It will say, do you want to run this program?
You were talking about the virus protection programs earlier. I was wondering what you thought of ABG.
It's a good program. It's very solid. I rate it near the top.
This is Matthew Bullis from Phoenix, Arizona. And I wanted to know also a question about defrag, though a different sort. My hard drive is fairly full with things, and I do a lot of audio editing on the computer, so there's a lot of data being moved around and bits of audio being deleted and moved around and things like that. And when I go to do defrag, it says, you know, there's less than 15% available. Free up some disk space and defrag again. Would you like to defrag anyhow? My question is it worth it to defrag even though there's less than 15%? I can't move any of the data off the hard drive because although it's backed up, I still need to get to it quickly.
May I ask a question after my second question, after you're through?
Time, please. My answer would be to get an external hard drive, move all the things you edit to that drive, then defrag your old drive, and this will keep things working faster for you. The less information a drive has, the faster it works. So if you have an 80-gig hard drive that has 20 gigs of information, it flies. If you have 75 gigs of information, it's pokey. So get an external drive, do your editing on that. The other plus is you can take that drive to any computer that has the editing software you use and the other software you need, and you can work it. That would be my answer.
All right, let's see, Fred, if we can get Joe up here. I think he had the second question, and we'll let him do that.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. And again, I enjoy your presentation. Disk defragger is a good one. And, Jeff, my second question was about Windows image and the unattended setup. You may want to talk on that. And can you put that up on the website, Bob, his instructions about that batch? Because we can't remember it. I can barely hear him. He's low, but I can, you know, it would help us maybe in the put it up there. And those are, because blind people sometimes, God only knows, have to reinstall Windows. And there is a Windows image.
Michael Farron left possession.
Sorry, Windows image where you can put all your programs on a new hard drive and do a Windows image. And if it ever crashes, you can just put in the disk and it'll reboot with Windows image. You may have to do one or two unattended setups. That's a modification of the Windows disk. That's my question. So all the drivers and the sound card drivers are installed. It has to do with script writing. You may want to know about that. Some of you people have heard of Rick Harmon. Who knows about that? I'm sure you guys know about him. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. First of all, this is being recorded, so I can hear Jeff. I have my, you know, he's coming through fine. But if you can't, it will be recorded, so you'll get all the verbal instruction. I love the verbal instructions that he's doing. So back off, let Jeff try to answer his thing about Windows imaging setup, whatever that is.
Thank you, Robert. There are two programs. One is called Disk Copy, and the other is called Ghost, which is now owned by the Norton folks, Symantec. And Ghost will actually duplicate a hard drive completely so that you now have a drive that's bootable if one crashes. Now, suppose you want to put a bigger hard drive in your laptop. Well, there's a company called Apricorn, A-P-P-R-I-C-O-R-N, at apricorn.com that makes a kit that includes an enclosure. You buy a new hard drive, you put it in the enclosure, you connect it to your laptop, you run the software, it will ghost your hard drive. Now you take the hard drive out of the laptop, put in the new one, and now the old one with that enclosure becomes a backup drive. I wouldn't use a Windows image unless it were in Ghost. I have great faith in Ghost, and it has saved a lot of people. Now, some people, if the data is critical, create a mirrored drive that you can do so that one drive mirrors the other. If the main drive crashes, the other drive is totally up to date to that moment and takes over. So you have those options.
Hi, I had one or two comments or that you may want to comment on. I've got a question. Going back to defrag, this is Gene from Chicago, by the way. Concerning defrag, my question is, why do you recommend running defrag in safe mode? In XP, defrag runs fine. When you're not in safe mode, in some earlier versions of Windows, some people had problems where it would stop or start repeating again and take a lot longer to finish. But in XP, it runs fine just regularly. And I don't think, even though it's unlikely, I don't think that people should run programs, unless they absolutely have to, without being able to look at the screen. What if there's some sort of error during the defrag? What if you're running it in safe mode? Yes, you can automate it and memorize commands and this sort of thing and run it. But in safe mode, no drivers are loaded. There is no way for a blind person to have access to anything on the screen during safe mode. So my question is, what technical advantage, if you're running XP, is there to running defrag in safe mode? And is it important enough, in your opinion, that it matters when you're using Windows XP? My other question is, my other comment was in terms of the backup that you're recommending. If I understand what you're recommending, your recommendation assumes that everything that a person has on their computer is stored as a subfolder in their My Documents, and a lot of people just don't store things that way. I mean, I've got an audio file on my hard drive that's not in My Documents. I've got all sorts of things that aren't in My Documents. So I want to make sure I understand that that's the result of what you're advocating. In other words, it's important for people to understand that if I understand what you're saying correctly, unless everything they have that they want to back up is in My Documents somewhere, it's not going to be backed up. So those are my two questions or comments, whatever the case. Thank you.
We'll start with the last one. I have backup batch files that have several lines. For example, one line is xcopy space C:\, and then I followed the route to a program called outlook.pst, and that file has all of my contacts, my calendar, all my email, everything. So I make a backup copy of that in the second line of the batch file, and then if I need my data from QuickBooks, I back it up in the third line. I was using My Documents as a demonstration, as an example, and you brought up a valid point. Now, going back to defrag, try it in regular mode, and if it works, fine. But early versions of XP had the same problem that ME and 98 and 95 had, and it would just stop or slow down or never finish. In safe mode, you have a lean, mean machine with nothing to distract it. I'm glad to hear from you in Chicago. It would help me to know when you talk to me where you're calling from. It's fascinating to me.
Ah, hello, Jeff. This is Pam. I'm on Dave's computer because I'm having volume problems, but I'm in Visalia, California. And, yes, we do listen to you online and on the radio when the conditions are good. I guess what I'm asking about is are there laptops which can essentially serve the same purpose as a desktop or a desktop replacement, or should I consider keeping my old desktop and just using that as a backup or a dedicated computer, because my desktop's going to crash someday. It's 5-6 years old. I've already replaced the power supply, and I just wonder.
Use it on a 24-hour basis?
And I do use it on a 24-hour basis. My audio, I have a transmitter hooked to it, and it's going 24/7. I use it like a radio, and I'm just wondering how I could have the convenience of a laptop and the capabilities of a desktop without having to buy two systems.
An example is the 6000 series and the Fujitsu line. I love Fujitsu laptops because they're made in Japan, they're made of Japanese components, and they have the lowest failure rate. And interestingly enough, Dell laptops have the worst failure rate, but the Dell desktops are solid like a rock. So you're talking about a 17-inch screen, and the reason is that with a 17-inch screen, you get the addition of the keypad that's on the right side of the keyboard on your desktop. That's included. And yes, you can get a Core 2 Duo or an AMD 64 2-core with 2 gigs of RAM and the right optical drive, and it will do everything your desktop does, and it'll give you the advantages of a laptop. Now, for those of you who leave laptops on like you do 24/7, there's a website that I'd like to put up for you. It's called Rode Tools, just like it sounds, rodetools.com. They offer a device called the Cool, C-O-O-L, Pad, P-A-D, which elevates the back of your laptop just enough to create convective cooling. And that translates into your laptop living longer.
Hi, Jeff. This is Ken Trebelarn calling from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to run here, but I just wanted to tell you that you had a very nice presentation and, you know, just a wealth of information that I collected from you. And if I've got any more questions, I'll find you on your radio website. Again, thanks so much.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I just wanted to cap that last question off. Is there a possibility of me getting such a device or a computer without Vista? Or is that pretty much, can such one be customized?
No, you can get one of these with XP, and you live not terribly far from Los Angeles, and I would be most happy to help you shop for your desktop replacement where I can get you the right equipment and save you some money. I buy my notebooks from a place called Notebook Shop, and the reason is this. Well, first of all, you can put 3 or 4 notebooks together and go on the Internet and get the feel for the keyboard, which is important for you if it's going to replace a desktop. This company has locations, if I can remember them all, Los Angeles, Northridge, Cerritos, Garden Grove, Irvine, and San Bernardino. And the stores are open 7 days a week, and that means tech support is available right from the store 7 days a week when they're open. Any new laptop that goes out the door is first put on the Internet, and whatever version of Windows you're running is updated as of that minute. And if you mention my name, you get a free carrying case and a free mouse and some other goodies, maybe for you a free 1-gig flash drive. So, Robert, if you can hear me, I would like to give this lady my phone number, but I don't want to broadcast it. Can you help me with that?
Yes, sir. I'll do that. I'll get with Pam on that. Okay. Any other question or two here?
Yeah. Jeff, this is Ronald Stanley from Longmont, Colorado. I listen to your show religiously, and in fact, I missed your Vista show that you were going to do, and so I'm sorry about that. But question. I tried to get a hold of Jetstream, DSL Extreme.com, and I called them, and I was excited. I was very excited about your DSL Extreme offer, and they told me that because I live in Longmont, Colorado, I was not eligible for DSL Extreme, that it was only a Colorado outfit. You know, I mean, if that's true, that's fine, but I'd like your help on possibly getting DSL Extreme because it would be wonderful to have. Especially at the rates and that sort of thing that you were talking about, it's a nice thing to have DSL at a reasonable rate. And I'm afraid that you know, the particular program I use right now, that I mean, the cable program is fine, but $60 a month is just a little much for internet. You know what I mean?
When he's through, Bob, can I ask another question when he's through?
Now let's let Jeff answer him or comment. I gather, Ron, you're saying DSL Extreme will not work Colorado. I don't know what you want him to talk to them, or I'm not clear what you wanted there. Anyway, maybe Jeff knows. So let's let Jeff do it. No, we want to give everybody a chance, please, at questions. I know all of them are good, but Joe, I'd like to give these other guys a chance first, if you don't mind, please.
Okay, I'll wait.
Extreme is a company that works anywhere in the USA, and it does work in Colorado.
Okay, any other questions, please?